Welcome to Brody Sports Talk. My name is Caleb Walgren. I am joined by my partner and co-host, Travis Conaway, and a special introduction to the man who joined us last week and is now our third co-host, well, second co-host, third host, Sean Morgan. Welcome to the podcast. How are you guys doing today?
I'm good. I'm tired, but everybody knows I've got a month old, so yeah. I stay tired.
I'd say I'm tired as well, but I don't have the same excuse. I just have poor habits.
You're just old.
Hey, no. I mean, old habits die hard. That being said, let's jump into it with the excitement or not excitement that we had this weekend.
Oh, I think it was
with
exciting.
The championship weekend. First, we have the Chiefs winning 35-24 over the Tennessee Titans. A nice little comeback victory for them. The first time that they've gone to the Super Bowl, I believe, since 1969. I also know that Sean is on the win one for Andy or ring for Reed or whatever you want to call that kind of movement. And so I just kind of want to let him give his recap on the game and where he's at with the Chiefs. Pseudo-fandom that he has obtained.
Hey now, so I mentioned to you before that my Chiefs pseudo-fandom came from Priest Holmes winning me Fantasy Football League back in the mid-2000s. But no, Andy Reid actually already has a ring as a coordinator.
Yes.
But this will be his first ring as a head coach. And man, Derrick Henry just got stifled in the second half. Right, I mean, I think he had, 2 yards, 3 yards?
They figured out if you stop Henry, you stop the Titans.
You know, I have to wonder how much of it was fatigue versus schematic. Mm-hmm. I mean, Henry had 30-plus carries in both of the Titans' other playoff games. I mean, it gets to a point where
Chuba Hubbard does it every single week.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's a bit of a difference between Big 12 defenses and NFL playoff defenses.
What's a Big 12 defense?
I don't know.
No one knows.
I don't know. I'm excited now looking into the Super Bowl. I mean, the Chiefs are capable of putting points on the board against anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they go. I mean, they had that deficit against the Titans. They had that deficit against the Texans. And then suddenly, you know, you blink and look, there's 28 points on the board. So even if the 49ers come out strong defensively, I still think, you know, Mahomes and Reed are going to be able to go through and, you know, slap some points on the board, and I'm actually favoring the Chiefs here heading into the Super Bowl.
I kind of agree with you, but this is the perfect scenario for me, for the Super Bowl that doesn't involve the Vikings. One, Packers aren't in it. Two, Patriots aren't in it. Three, I love both coaches. I think both coaches have a good reason to win a ring. I think Reed deserves one, and I think the fact that Shanahan got so much flack for the 28-3 meltdown of his Falcons that I would like to see him win one too. It was pretty cool to see Kyle Shanahan giving the trophy to or Mike giving it to Kyle. That was pretty cool to me. And so both of them, you know, both of them, in my opinion, deserve it. Both teams are insanely solid and look to be solid for a good amount of time. So I don't think this will be the last time we see these two battle it out, just because they're both fairly young, except for Richard Sherman.
The immortal
Richard Sherman. I kind of am with you. I think the Chiefs can score on everybody. I don't think the 49ers can stop everybody. And so I also am picking the Chiefs to take it. I think it'll be one of the closest battles that we have all season. But, I think the Chiefs win it.
I think that this one, just to talk about the Chiefs getting the win, they were able to force the Titans to kick a field goal, which they hadn't done all playoffs.
Oh, I know,
to this
right?
Point.
Actually, it was since week 9 or something that they hadn't kicked a field goal.
I think maybe
crazy.
One. So kudos to the Chiefs for being able to force a field goal, and also they only got touchdowns. I think if anything has been learned throughout this playoffs, it has been that those red zone attempts have mattered so much. When you think of when Baltimore lost to Tennessee, they kicked two field goals when they needed to have touchdowns, especially with the turnovers they ended up having in that game. I think one thing that you can't get when you're preparing for the Chiefs is what they can do to you offensively. When you see Patrick Mahomes' arm mixed with Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill's speed, and then you have, at least in the argument for the best tight end, we're going to have fantastic tight ends in the Super Bowl, with Travis Kelce, who
just went out there
and balled, and he only had 5 touchdowns in the regular season, and he had 3 touchdowns
in the playoffs.
It's really difficult to go, okay, well, what are you going to try to stop? Because stopping the run, you can't do the same thing. You can load the box. Stopping the pass, you can't just be like, okay, well, let's put 2 people on Tyreek and 2 people on Hardman and 2 people on Kelce. Then all of a sudden you have 5 people for the rest of your defense.
Yeah.
And you're not rushing the passer.
No.
Patrick Mahomes has also showed far more elusiveness as a runner than I would have imagined, because he doesn't really break that out.
No.
He usually gets out of the pocket and has some, what I would say, Favre-esque throws out of the pocket.
Sorry.
Hey, you love Favre.
So I love Favre for one season.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that probably one of the most impressive things about Mahomes is the fact that he is, for as young as he is, so poised in some of the throws that he makes. Very rarely do you see him make a throw where you look back and you're like, wow, that was a terrible decision. Even if he's in a very tight spot, he always manages to keep his eyes downfield. He's always looking for the open man. He's always looking for the play to make. He never seems to get too rattled. And I think, especially heading into the 49ers game, that's going to be huge because he is going to see a lot of pressure. He's going to see a lot of different looks. 49ers have a lot of time to prepare. I don't know if it's going to be enough. But history shows that, generally speaking, when you have a very strong defensive matchup going into a strong offensive matchup, usually defense wins.
Yeah, they always say defense wins championships.
But I feel like if you look at maybe the last 10 years, the strong offense almost is always super one-dimensional and overly reliant on one key player. And I don't think, as you kind of touched on, the Chiefs' offense really has just that one big cog that makes everything go. There are so many little parts that go into it. So I think this is going to be a little bit different than you've seen in years past.
To go ahead and just touch on the other game, because we haven't talked about it, there was much sadness as the Green Bay Packers lost to the San Francisco 49ers, 37-20. And it was also just not a good game for the Packers.
Yeah, that score makes it seem a lot closer than it really was, in my opinion.
Also, you got to give a shout-out to the Packers' defense for being able to shut down the pass. I mean, wait.
I mean, is it shutting down if it never really needs to be turned on in the first place?
So, Jimmy Garoppolo only had 8 attempts.
I
said going into the game, if George Kittle had less than 4 catches for 30 yards, I was going to be happy. I was wrong.
You were wrong.
He had 1 catch for 19 yards. And granted, Jimmy G did torch us the first game. I was worried about what he was going to do in the passing game because he ate us alive. This game, it was Raheem Mostert eating us alive. The running back that's been cut by 6 teams, including the Eagles.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I also feel like this is a little bit of Kyle Shanahan learning his lesson from the Super Bowl. Because he said, well, let's just keep handing the ball to Mostert. Let's hand the ball to Mostert some more.
And it works.
He had 29 carries. Granted, those 29 carries were 220 yards.
And 4 touchdowns.
I mean,
yeah,
when you hit the end zone, you don't really need to have any more carries, so the fact that he didn't break 30 is not too surprising considering how often they ran.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, Aaron Rodgers played. I mean, if you look at every stat except for interceptions, he played a phenomenal game.
And fumbles.
Turnovers were big. I mean, but when you see, like, if you just look at the top stat line, it's 31 for 39 for 326. You think that dude had a pretty solid game. except for he followed it up with 2 touchdowns and 2 interceptions.
I mean,
just in the passing game.
There were so many times where the turnovers just simply killed any momentum the Packers were able to build. And the fact that the 49ers did not slow down at all on offense, there were very few lulls in their drives. It just seemed like as soon as the Packers got on the field, as soon as they were able to start to try to build up some offensive momentum, big plays would happen, and they'd get into these third and long situations. And then, yeah, the interception, the fumble, like, it was... It just wasn't a good game for the Green Bay Packers. Now, I guess, considering that they won a playoff game, at least, they... aren't the weakest 13-win team ever, you know, compared to the Saints. But, you know, I have to wonder, I mean, I haven't seen a team come out, like, that flat in a championship game in a long time. Given, right, newer coach, okay, so there's some growing pains, but...
So, just in general, I feel like this is a bit of how the Packers played most of the year. We kind of would do this thing where we would have one drive where you're like, man, that offense looks amazing.
Right.
And then you'd have the next drive where you're like, what the crap was that? I do think it's interesting. I don't claim to know a lot about advanced statistics, but when we had Aaron Jones in the game, Bill Barnwell has repeatedly said that the Packers had about the 5th best offense in the league. And when we put Jamal Williams in the game, we had an offense that was about what the New York Giants were this year. So, which was down near the bottom of the barrel.
So,
it is, I think if you look at the things like it's LaFleur's first year as a head coach, it's the first year in that offense.
Did the Rams with him as offensive coordinator make the playoffs? Or was this his first chance at the playoffs?
No, he made the playoffs.
I mean, it's obviously
they didn't go very far, but...
Yeah,
he also wasn't calling the plays, so
no, he was.
He's only called the plays for 2 years: last year with Tennessee and this year with Green Bay.
Right.
So he's still kind of getting it under his feet that way. I just think that we'll see what happens this offseason. No one thought the Packers were going to go out and sign 2 guys that were going to both put up double-digit sacks. Obviously, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't think we can plan on replicating that by signing 2 receivers that are going to put up 1,000-yard seasons or anything like that. But you never know what's going
to
happen.
I don't need 1,000-yard, you know, seasons out of your receivers to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
sometimes you don't even need, you know, 500-yard receivers. You just need some tight ends who are going to catch the ball a lot.
Or a running back that will run for 4 touchdowns.
Yeah. So question.
We've had a 4-touchdown running.
So question for you then. Question for you. Was this Aaron Rodgers' last great hurrah, think? Is this the farthest that he gets in the rest of his career?
I don't think so. I think that we're going to see him again, in part because when I look at divisions, I tend to look at what quarterbacks are the best, and he's still the best quarterback in a NFC North that doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in the quarterbacks because you have a Matt Stafford that just missed the last 8 games or whatever of the year with a back injury. You have Mitchell Trubisky. Ha-ha. You could have drafted Mahomes or Watson. Thank you for not doing that, Chicago. And
nobody wants that.
And then you have Mr. Guaranteed Money. You like that? Kirk Cousins up in Minnesota. And while Kirk has been good, I don't think anyone's going to come in and say Kirk is earth-shattering, game-changing as a quarterback. Rodgers still has his moments. I think give him more time in that offense, the offense is going to look better, plus they're going to put more talent around him.
I hate to tell you, but based off of history, and you know history repeats itself, Aaron Rodgers is coming to Minnesota eventually for one last hurrah to get them there.
So, I mean,
Minnesota does like signing old scrubs from our team.
I mean, you're not wrong in that the Packers have, you know, I wouldn't say entrenched themselves in their division, but are arguably the odds-on favorite most years. But, I mean, is that going to transition into, you know, playoff success? I mean, it kind of sort of hasn't, except for, you know, one really notable instance.
I mean, McCarthy was also super conservative, and I think LaFleur is not. And I think that that's going to pay off at some point. Mm-hmm. But we also have to have our offense run better in order for the aggressive play calls to work.
Sure.
Let's go ahead and switch over to some coaching carousel news. First off, everyone's leaving LSU. I think that I'd read somewhere else that they're going to have Ed Ogeron and a secretary, and that's about it. Dave Aranda is going to Baylor.
Yeah.
It was LSU's defensive coordinator. Kind of an interesting look for Baylor. Sean, why don't you start with your thoughts on Aranda to Baylor?
So, I mean, I think it was a good hire. I mean, Baylor is, I wouldn't say a upper echelon job, but it is arguably a B-plus tier job. And I think that considering the Big 12 is not really known for defensive prowess, that Aranda has had some statistically top tier defenses, mm-hmm. has coached defensively in the SEC, which, you know, I am an SEC homer, so I think that 100% that experience is going to transition very well. What's going to be interesting, though, is to see how recruiting goes for him, mm-hmm. and as with any sort of defensive hire, who your offensive coordinator is really dictates whether or not you have success.
I also thought it was interesting. I know Rule was a little bit more defensive, and his defensive coordinator went with him to the Panthers. So I think knowing that they can shore things up on that side of the ball is a big win for them here. Mm-hmm. I do think the OC is going to matter quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. You play in an offensive league.
If you were going to rank Baylor's chances this coming season, Travis, in the Big 12, where would you put them?
I have them at like 4th or 5th, honestly, just because they do bring back quite a few players. And yes, a coaching staff change is big. So I don't have them winning it. I don't have them having a chance. But I do have them in the middle pack, just because that's kind of how the Big 12 always is. You know, you have the OSU, the Texas, the OU, you know, top tier, middle of the pack, and then Kansas. And that's just kind of how it works. What kind of intrigues me about this is, are we officially going to get the decision of, is the Big 12 offense just so good that the defense look trash, or are the defenses actually trash? Because you bring in a defensive coach to be your head coach to, you know, into an insanely offensive league, going up against, you know, teams like OU and Oklahoma State and Texas who can just score. It's curious to see how he's going to fare, and it could be his detriment, to be completely honest.
I'm just looking forward to when he plays TCU next year and they have like a 3-0 game against Gary Patterson. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm excited for OSU to beat him 63-7 with Tylan Wallace going for 1,000 yards in a game.
Homer! Okay.
Heck yeah, I'm a homer.
Let's go ahead and move to the NFL for a moment. As
what is that
Jason
for?
Garrett becomes the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants.
I was not involved in this clapping plan.
It was not a plan.
Yeah, it wasn't a plan.
What does Jason Garrett do well?
Oh, well.
If you can't hear us over the claps, we're talking about Jason Garrett.
If it involves Jason Garrett, I don't pay that much attention because, you know, neither does he.
He's definitely going to be calling plays. Because Judge was a special teams coach. He brings 10 years of head coaching experience to the New York Giants as an assistant.
Does he?
I didn't say quality head coaching experience. I actually think that it's a good move. Let him focus on one side of the ball. Mm-hmm. He kind of gets a shot at revenge at Dallas 2 times a year. You're working with a young quarterback. He's worked with a young quarterback in Dak Prescott. Daniel Jones arguably should be far more talented based off of where he was drafted. That's debatable.
That's not saying a whole lot, man.
You're basically saying, here's a team that has a star running back, a young quarterback, and not good talent at receivers. Oh, wait. It sounds a lot like the offense of the new Dallas Cowboys the past couple years.
I kind of want to
I think
Jason
it'll be interesting
to
see how Garrett does. But I don't think it's a bad hire.
No, I don't think it's a bad hire. I really, like, I know they're probably not looking for a position, but I really wanted Jason Garrett to go to the Eagles and be insanely successful. Just because, you know,
Eagles Dallas, are trying to hire an OC. We don't have it yet, so that's why it's not on here.
Stay tuned
for future podcasts.
The Dallas Eagles rivalry is one of my favorites just because it's so bitter.
Yes, it is.
And it's so much fun because I have friends on both sides that hate. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like the Packers, but there are other teams I hate more than the Packers. Not when it comes to the Eagles versus the Cowboys. And I really wanted Jason Garrett to pull that petty, I'm going to become the offensive coordinator of the Eagles and score 70 points on Dallas Cowboys just to look at Jerry Jones and stare at him in the face. That's really what I wanted, but I'll take him. As long as he's not in the NFC North, I don't care. The Giants, I think it's a good hire. I think you make a good point of let him focus on one side of the ball versus trying to run an entire team while you have Jerry Jones breathing down your back.
No, I agree. I think that now that Garrett's outside of the Dallas prison that he was in for a decade, I think he's actually a pretty solid play caller.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the personnel decisions that the Cowboys have made over the years weren't necessarily decisions that he would have made otherwise. And I think it's going to give him a chance to kind of reinvent himself. It's so hard to have a decade's worth of coaching experience in the NFL. And like with one organization, so I'm actually excited to see how the Giants fare. I still hope they don't fare too well,
right?
But I would love to see them actually go through and potentially snag like a wild card spot over the Cowboys, like week 15, 16, 17, like knock them back down to maybe, I don't know, a nice even 8-8. Just the perfect Cowboys record. No, I agree with you 100%, Caleb. I think that Garrett's going to be able to stabilize some of the inconsistency that the Giants offense had, and focusing just on that side of the ball. I expect him to be in a head coaching role within the next 2 years.
And the next one I have on the list is, I'm not planning on spending a ton of time on, but I know Travis had talked about him. Because he kind of had desires for him in America's Brightest Orange.
Oh, man.
But Todd Monken says, glory, glory to old Georgia, and joins
Georgia's about to have the highest power offense in the nation. Second only to OSU.
We'll have to see what happens. But do you think that he's going to be able to make enough difference in a year that they could be... Are they still going to win the SEC East this coming year?
No. And this makes... Okay, I'm almost broke in my mouth. Florida is probably going to win the SEC East. It's interesting to see how Monken's going to come in and kind of reshape the offense. Yeah. It's too bad that Fromm left.
Yeah.
I mean,
he would have been great with Fromm.
Yeah, it would have been like fantastic. It's always interesting when a NFL offensive coordinator dips down
mm-hmm.
to college. Not as a head coach, but specifically as an OC. You always end up with kind of a reshaping of the offense, and arguably that's more attractive to certain recruits who fit like the pro-style schematic, and they can go through and they can mm-hmm. transition into the NFL. And Georgia's really a school that actually kind of caters to those style recruits.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good move. And I am tentatively like excited to see what happens. I would love for it to fall apart.
Well,
but,
obviously,
you know, I don't think that that's going to be the case. I still think Florida is going to walk the SEC East, though.
I mean, I love Todd Monken. I think very highly of him from his time at OSU. One thing that goes a long way that people forget about is Todd Monken is an insanely good recruiter. And I think the years in the pros are going to help that for the same reason you just said. He's going to be able to tell the kids, I've coached pros, multiple teams.
Like, just pretend that I'm not associated with Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, I'm not Freddie Kitchens. I'm Todd Monken. He has an insanely good resume. I was honestly shocked that he did go as an OC and didn't get a head coaching position offered. because there are still head coaching positions out there. But maybe that's what he wanted to do. Maybe he wanted to step back into the OC position. He should have stepped back into a co-OC position at OSU. But, you know, eventually Casey Dunn's going to lead us to the, you know, highest
land.
Yeah, to the promised land, and then he's going to get a head coaching job, and then Munkin's going to come back.
Well,
what's the promised land? 10 wins and a Cotton Bowl loss?
According to Chuba Hubbard, a national championship.
Oh, okay.
Let's go ahead and move forward. So he's not going to be wearing it in the game, but there was a picture going around on social media that just kind of made me cringe a little bit. Someone gave Jalen Hurts a half OU crimson and half Alabama slightly darker crimson helmet.
Crimson.
And, of course, the Alabama side had the number 2 on it, and he's wearing 1 in the Senior Bowl, so that would have also been really awkward and kind of funny.
Yeah.
Can I just say that, in general, I really liked when players stayed at one school for their college career. And I don't blame him. He was clearly getting surpassed by Tua. But this moment just feels super cringy and super awkward to me.
So I just don't like the fact that they don't do it. I mean, they're not doing it for anybody else. It's just him. And how many people transfer nowadays?
But how many people transfer when they have the history at the school that they had before, like Jalen Hurts did? I mean, Joe Burrow didn't really have much speak of. I mean, Mahomes didn't have, like, not Mahomes, who was
Baker.
Baker, yeah. Didn't have much to speak of at Texas Tech. So it doesn't bother me that much. And I think our discussion, like a discussion on quarterbacks or at least high-profile players transferring junior, senior year, whenever they lose a starting spot, it's a conversation for an entirely different day, because I disagree with you. I think it's actually fantastic. But we can talk about that definitely another time. This didn't bother me nearly as much. I think, if anything, it shows that, you know, maybe Jalen does still have a soft spot for Alabama.
Absolutely.
I mean, he arguably didn't really achieve a whole lot with OU. Right? If anything, you know,
the trophy finalist.
Yeah, but
you know,
that at Alabama.
Going to the playoff that Alabama didn't do this year.
No, I think from an expectation standpoint, you look at the quarterbacks that OU had before he came in, and the ceiling was pretty high.
Yeah.
And a lot of OU fans were somewhat down on him, I think, this year for some of the more boneheaded decisions that he would make, and the fact that he would kind of disappear in the middle of big games for, you know, a drive or two at a time and really set them behind, especially if OU went down. At all, so
and
yeah,
you say he. I mean, I agree with you that he didn't do all that much at OU, and then you list the acolytes. But how much of that was him?
I don't deny that it was Lincoln's offense,
right.
And that made him look way better.
How many games
as a passer than we ever saw him as at Alabama?
How many games should OU have lost had the other team not, you know, just completely crapped the bed? Like, I mean, I'm biased because I think other players should have been there, but I don't think he had a Heisman caliber season, and I don't think he should have ever been in New York. But sometimes it's about the position you play and the jersey you wear.
It's his name, it's the expectation, it's, you know, the prior history.
Yeah.
There's a lot that went into it, but no, I mean, heck, this was the Heisman was the Joe Burrow Invitational this year.
Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. That was one of the ones that was almost obvious that he was going to win it.
We're running a little bit behind, so I'm going to go ahead and go through this day in sports history a little bit quickly. If you guys have, you know, something you want to add in about 20 seconds, we can do that. But the first one, this day in sports history, we are recording this on January 22nd. In 1984, we had Super Bowl 18, where the Raiders won 38-9 over the Redskins. Everyone in this room is happy to see the Redskins lose the Super Bowl.
Joe Gibbs. The racing team sucks.
So, Marcus Allen was the third Heisman Trophy winner to be named Super Bowl MVP. Had 20 carries, 191 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Also, this is the first Super Bowl that had the biggest commercial, with the 1984 Apple Macintosh commercial, which is interesting because it happened in 1984. Apple knew what they were doing, what, that's 35 years ago or 36 years ago? And let's just say they still know what they're doing in the game today. Any quick thoughts from you two on Super Bowl 18?
Two interesting points. One, this was the biggest margin of victory in a Super Bowl until the 49ers trounced the Broncos 55-10 in 90. And the beautiful voiced Barry Manilow performed the national anthem.
Oh, I didn't know that.
just to keep moving forward, we had another Super Bowl that was on this day. It's in 1989. It was Super Bowl 23, where the 49ers won 20-16 over the Bengals. The GOAT, Jerry Rice, Super Bowl MVP, 11 catches, 215 yards, and a touchdown.
Best to ever do it.
Cincinnati only got a touchdown on a kick return touchdown.
It was a 3-3 tie at halftime. Interesting fact about that season. The Green Bay Packers finished 10-6, but missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
Robbed.
another fun fact about that Super Bowl. It is regarded as the weirdest Super Bowl halftime show. Can either one of you tell me who performed it?
I know Billy Joel did the national anthem.
He did.
But I don't know who performed at halftime.
Elvis Presto.
What?
When I Google... When
he was a magician.
It says, Bebop Bamboozled, South Florida area dancers and performers including Elvis Presto and 3D Effects.
Wow. Man.
That sounds...
Bruce Springsteen, eat your heart out.
Horrible.
Elvis Presto is literally widely known as the weirdest Super Bowl halftime show, and that stems from multiple years that have been super weird, including Dancing Sharks.
Left Shark.
Hashtag Left Shark.
14 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. 14 years ago, we have the best game of Kobe Bryant's career.
Mm-hmm.
81 points as his team scored 122 to win 122-104 over the Toronto Raptors. That was very impressive. I think that I didn't watch the game as it happened, but it was definitely one of those things where after kind of the dynasty in the early 2000s, this was one of the first times that everyone was talking about Kobe Bryant all the time for the next couple of weeks, because it was like it happened and then there was the All-Star game and it was just a lot of hype around Kobe being Bryant.
Well, I mean, Kobe had nobody on his team. I mean, Smush Parker, Kwame Brown, like... The fact is that this was way more impressive than Wilt Chamberlain's 100 points. I remember actually seeing highlights.
Has been confirmed.
Yeah, I remember seeing the highlights of this and kind of looking at the recaps. I mean, Kobe created these shots.
Oh, yeah.
This wasn't just him getting fed a bunch of assists. He went through and he just completely took over on both sides of the ball. And I think that's probably the most impressive performance by any NBA player in history. As far as just individual performance, not talking about the stakes or anything along those lines. I mean, though I don't think there'll ever be anybody quite like him, personality-wise or just almost larger than, like...
Larger than the game.
I don't want to say larger than the game, but, I mean, people use his name whenever they shoot.
Yeah.
Like, he is an icon.
Kobe.
I will say that, like, this was the sweet spot to Kobe Bryant in his scoring career. Because, like, just a month before this game, he did, like, I think it was, like, 65 or 62 points or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that quarters. Leading up to it.
Yeah, in three quarters. So he could have done it twice. Like, how many times do we see players have 20-point quarters? Like, that's insane.
I mean, Russ used to try.
Well, yeah, but Russ also was a stat padder, and we all know it.
I do want to just say I pulled up the box score. Schmush Parker, second leading scorer for the Lakers that game, with 13 points. He had a beautiful 1 of 5 from three.
How do you get the... Was Smush his name or his nickname? I need to know this. This is very important.
No, I think it's his actual name.
Oh, God. Why? Why have you done this?
No, Smush. When I pull it up, it says William
Henry
Parker.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Henry. Good, good. Smush is a weird name.
Just to be...
Also, I'm just throwing it out there. When you Google Smush Parker, the very first, like, response that Google tries to force you to Google is Smush Parker Kobe.
Imagine imagine your career summed up in the fact that you actually played alongside somebody else.
Just to keep moving here, we've got the 2012 championship games were both outstanding, and they were also both on this day 8 years ago. It is what led us to the Patriots won 23-20 over the Ravens. Did you know they would draft Justin Tucker the next year because their kicker missed a field goal to tie that game at the end. And Justin Tucker beat him out.
Isn't he considered the most accurate kicker in history right now?
I would say yes.
I don't know if that's like official, but that's what I heard.
And this might be me being bitter, but the New York Giants also won 20-17. Yeah. I didn't... That was... the year that they eliminated us from the playoffs when we were the one seed. My Packers. Aaron Rodgers wanted back-to-back. And as I have this up, it says that we lost that game 37-20. So that just seems fitting for how Rodgers loses games.
Sometimes you beat the number one and the number two seeds on the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, as is tradition with the NFC East, the Giants actually won that division at 9-7, beating the Cowboys, who were both 8-7 at the time, to bring the Cowboys to the most Cowboys-esque record possible, 8-8. Yeah, I mean, it led to one of the best moments in Super Bowl history.
Which moment is that?
Just seeing the Patriots lose.
Oh, okay.
It's the best moment of Super Bowl history.
Also, I just have to give a shout-out because that was a playoffs where there was a game of 24-2 that the Giants won over the Falcons. So for those of you who are like, yes, I saw them only score 2 points, you are welcome. Well, with Sean being the newest Brody, we are giving him a little bit of time to do his pronounced soccer talk.
Well, I'm gonna head out.
And we're gonna call this 300 seconds of soccer. So we'll go ahead and let Sean go on the clock.
Can I set
now.
My timer?
What? All right. So
we can stop. We can interrupt him at the end of it.
So some of you guys know already that I am a pretty big Arsenal fan. So I kind of wanted to chat a little bit about the Chelsea match at Stamford Bridge. Ultimately, it was a 2-2 draw. We're still sitting middle of the table. It looks like Chelsea is going to be slipping down a bit in the table. They've had a run of bad form recently, but especially this game was probably one of the most gut-wrenching for them. We go down a man, David Luiz, with a arguably bad but very necessary foul. A 100% necessary. Mustafi just brain farted all over the place, which, if you guys ever watch Arsenal consistently, Mustafi is not exactly the most tactically sound and consistent player. He'll play for 80, 85 minutes, beautiful defensive football, and then for 60 seconds, he will do something that makes you think that he is a 6-year-old on a YMCA field. And you're just like, what are you doing? And unfortunately, that led to this. But, you know, we fought back. Martinelli had that beautiful run, where Conte slipped and Martinelli bagged the goal. Bellerin with a hero mode in the, I think it was like 86th minute. Two shots on goal, two goals. Efficiency.
Right? That's what I said.
Yeah. I think Chelsea had like 19 shots with like 8 or 9 on target. They just couldn't finish consistently, and just those defensive gaffes led to our goals. And Chelsea consistently just falls apart against us now. It used to be a little bit different when they had Mourinho there, but ever since Mourinho left from his latest stint, I feel like Chelsea has just kind of lost their swagger against us. So it was a nice result. We still need to make some significant strides to kind of climb back up the table. Arteta has us playing brilliant football. I think everybody's buying into his system. Xhaka looks way better. Ozil's actually getting play. It's been nice. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how the rest of the season goes. I still think we're going to potentially climb up and maybe snag 5th, 6th. But we've got a long journey ahead of us. So a couple other things. Chicharito is going to LA Galaxy. You guys know who that is, right? Mexican hero.
Yep.
So he had some flashes of success in Europe, right? Played for United, played for West Ham, played for, I think, Sevilla is who he played for most recently. He just never really amounted to what I think a lot of Mexican fans really wanted him to. And, you know, no fault of his own. A lot of the European leagues are a lot rougher. There's a cultural adjustment. There's just a style of play adjustment. And sometimes to get really acclimated, you have to be in a similar or same environment for a long period of time. And he's kind of bounced around different places. So I'm actually excited to see how he does with Galaxy. I mean, if you guys follow MLS at all, LA Galaxy did not... I mean, they made... The playoffs last year did not really amount to much. They gave up, I think, like in the like top five most goals in the MLS. They're just not defensively sound. Chicharito not exactly known for his all-star defensive play, so he doesn't really bring that much there. But I mean, anytime you have a high-profile player go to the MLS, you look at Zlatan, you look at Thierry Henry, you look at Rooney, Beckham, Lampard. They all come in and they have. A similar, if not notably higher level of success relative to what they had before, even though they're older, just considering the level of play. So I think Chicharito is in a fantastic environment. He's going to have tremendous support in LA. So I am excited for those fans and that fan base. And I think this, I don't know how much this will help MLS, but, I still think it's going to be good for him. Finally, one last thing, state of the Premier League. Nobody is catching Liverpool. 13 points clear, 21 wins, 1 draw, no losses. God, I hope they lose at least one. I still want to have the Invincibles as one of our things. Run a bad form for Leicester. Losses to Burnley, Southampton, 6 points behind City, 5 points between them and Chelsea. If they continue it, they could very well drop out of Champions League football. And I encourage everybody to keep an eye on the relegation battle. 7 clubs within 7 points of relegation. Relegation fights are almost always the most entertaining part of watching any European football. So as the league or as the calendar progresses, keep an eye on those bottom teams and see who ends up getting the boot back to the championship.
Yeah. Excellent. And that was pretty much right on point there.
That was spot on for 300 seconds. I'm impressed. Yes,
efficiency.
I said a timer just
of efficiency.
Two shots on target.
3 points, 5 minutes.
That being said, we'll go over to baseball announced 2 players for the Hall of Fame.
Larry Walker.
Woo! Larry Walker! Go Rockies!
In his final year of eligibility, Larry Walker made it in. I think everyone's kind of excited to see someone, especially in that last year, get the vote bump. That was clearly well-deserved. Mm-hmm. It was ironic to me. I saw someone post the advanced stats yesterday of Larry Walker and Derek Jeter, and their war, which I know not everyone likes war, but their war was nearly identical over their careers. Mm-hmm. And yet the other group of people are upset that Derek Jeter didn't get a unanimous vote when almost no one does. Babe Ruth was like 95%. Like, just... It pretty much almost never happens. And, I mean, yeah, Derek Jeter was a classic dude, but I'm okay with him not getting it. He's a Yankee.
I just hate the Hall of Fame voting system.
Oh,
let
it's
me,
horrible.
Let me
I will
be
completely
the, let
trash
me be
it.
The like 7,000th person to say that a bunch of old farts, you know, deciding,
I don't really like that guy. He just has the kind of attitude I don't like.
Like, baseball is full of so many fogies who want things done the same way they were done 30, 40, 50 years ago. And I'm so happy that Walker made it in. I think a lot of people were concerned that he wouldn't. And I think he himself was concerned that he wouldn't. I think he posted something on Twitter before the results were announced about, hey, you know, I'm probably not going to make it in. I just want to thank everybody for supporting me. And he was wearing a SpongeBob shirt.
You can't go wrong with a SpongeBob
like,
shirt.
Like, come on, man, this guy is just so super likable. But yeah, I think that Jeter should have probably deserved a unanimous, even though we don't give it. It's probably just like how many.
I think that baseball just needs to say, look, you have to vote for X number of people, and maybe you won't have classes of two.
Yeah.
Or zero, or one. Come on, baseball! You've got to get this figured out.
So, how many more? I think Bonds is in his eighth year. Clemens is in his eighth year.
Yeah, but I don't think either one of them will ever get in.
Vote tallies were really low.
Yeah, and
they're at this point, they're almost forgotten.
How do you guys feel about Curt Schilling?
He was getting close.
He's very close.
Schilling is going to end up getting the votes. And while I feel like he talks a lot more than we sometimes need him to, his baseball career was excellent. And he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame based off of what he did on the field. And that's where it should matter.
Interesting tidbit about Curt Schilling. If you guys look into 38 Studios... he actually founded a video game studio that produced one game and practically bankrupted an entire city. The game's actually really good. Kingdoms of Amalur, Age of Reckoning is the game. Came out a long time ago, but yeah, he bankrupted a city or township because of the investment. Anyway.
I do want to throw this out there because on Twitter... not Mr. Tibbs does an excellent job. He actually tracks all the public ballots. Mm-hmm. And from that, Curt Schilling would have been at 77.6%, Bonds was at 71.2%, and Clemens was at 70.3%. Now, the private vote is always less, which is why even little Larry Walker was at 83.6, he barely cleared 75. It will be interesting to see if, you know, with Walker getting in, Jeter's clearly in, if we'll see... you know, Schilling or Bonds, Clemens, anyone get that bump this next year that they deserve.
You know who we won't see? Sammy Sosa. Later.
Yeah.
That being said,
those three right there will never make it. The Sosa-McGuire group.
Let's talk about college basketball for a few brief moments.
I don't want to.
Travis, we'll start with you. Oklahoma State is 9-9, and they had a loss at Ames, Iowa last night. 89-82. Tell me what you think about losing at Ames, Iowa.
I want to know where the heck the team that beat teams like Syracuse and Mississippi State went. You know, we beat Syracuse early on in the season, and then we spanked Ole Miss, not Mississippi State, sorry. And we beat Yale, which was supposed to be a pretty good team. And then we got into Big 12 play and just crapped the bed.
Big 12 is powerhouse league, isn't
it? I mean, yeah. It's been really bad, and it all kind of spiraled as soon as we lost to Georgetown. I don't even think we've lost or won a game since. Yeah, we beat Houston. We've lost 9 out of 10, and that's just ridiculous.
Hard out there for a poke.
To transition to some of my Big 10 boys, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, we are 7-12. After a 82-68 loss at Wisconsin this past week.
Losing record.
They definitely jumped around in victory last night. We are 2-6 in conference play. And this probably is going to be the only time I talk about Nebraska this year, so I have to give a shout-out to one of the best names in college basketball. Thor Bjarnason from Reykjavik, Iceland, doing his thing for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Anytime I can say Thor in your first name and your last name, you are an awesome dude.
Heck yeah, Icelandic naming conventions.
That being said, let's go over to a team that actually has a winning record.
Hey, winning record!
In the University of Tennessee, who went to 12-6, 4-2 in the SEC, with a crushing win over the Ole Miss Rebels, 73-48 yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very necessary victory. I mean, we definitely aren't the same team that we were last year. Of course, you had so many, you know, key players leave. One, we also lost to Wisconsin, so I empathize with you there. It was not as, actually, ours was slightly more crushing than yours, so you at least have that to hold over our heads. I'm just excited that heading into our game against Kansas, I mean, Kansas is going to be fielding, like, people from the bleachers at this point. You know, I mean, fortunately, much of their starting group and bench decided that they're going to turn, to turn into a WWE event. And
well, they should.
Expecting somebody to come off the turnbuckle, and
they should reach out to Boykin. He knows all about recruiting off of campus.
Yeah, that's true.
I was waiting for the Undertaker to like drop out of the sky, and then for I don't know. Like Bill Self to get choke slammed on the cage or something. But no, I think that Tennessee is probably going to finish, well outside of the top three in the SEC. I mean, we're definitely not going to have any longevity. I think we may be able to sneak into the tournament on a good run. But I feel like this team's destined for the NIT. Honestly, it'd be nice if we can go on a really good run. Maybe knock off a Kentucky and Auburn. We looked so bad against LSU that it was just very disheartening and kind of set, I think, the tone for the rest of the season that it's going to be uphill.
Just going to throw this out there because we have breaking news. Travis, can you give me the breaking news sound?
Breaking news.
Jayhawks, Silvo D'Souza suspended indefinitely for role in brawl with Kansas State.
I told you, when you pick up a chair to try to hit somebody, you don't get to play anymore.
So,
he's got to, I mean,
he will be missing the game against Tennessee for sure.
And then suddenly, his phone rings. It's Vince McMahon.
We got two options for you. You got the WWE, or you got the XFL. Where are you coming?
I just had to throw that out there, you know, trying to keep up to date with things as we're recording. That being said, the Pro Bowl is this weekend. I know it doesn't get a lot of love. It actually gets high ratings from television viewers. It was viewed by about 9 million people last year. And when you consider most MLB playoff games were around 5 million up to the World Series, that's pretty good for an exhibition game. That being said, my favorite thing is the skills contest, where they do dodgeball, the gauntlet, precision passing, all those various things. What event do you think the Pro Bowl should have?
I'd like to take the first one here, and I want to paint a picture for you. Out on the field, you see Doug Flutie.
Oh, God.
You're dressed up. Full suit, big old top hat. You know, and it's a drop kick competition. But, specifically, you have to do it wearing old school pads with an old helmet, right? Lord. It would be beautiful, and it doesn't have to be done every year, right? It could be a special event, maybe every 3 years, every 5 years. But I want to see Doug Flutie out there showing the kids how it's done, how a drop kick is just quintessential classic football.
I'm gonna pass on that one. What do you think, Travis?
I mean, it's Doug Flutie. I'm down for it.
Hater.
I do have to say, this is not my idea, but if they did have to have kicking as a special event, just play horse.
I want Ocho Cinco.
I want horse where they say, line it up wherever the heck you want. Line it up in the stands. It has to go through the uprights. Make it the McDonald's commercial with Magic... or with Larry Bird and Michael Jordan, except with kickers and the uprights.
Can you imagine like having an NBA player take the ball and just kind of like throw it, and then like a punter has to go and kind of kick it like out of the air as it's falling?
I want all of the NFL kickers to play a game of foot volleyball.
That would be pretty good.
This is probably just me because I think that it sounds awesome. I want them to do a gigantic game of slip and slide kickball between the rosters from
easy
the AFC
game,
and
perfect.
NFC.
Yeah.
Hey.
Just
because it would be awesome doesn't mean that they shouldn't do it.
Don't we want the Pro Bowl to be injury free? Isn't that the goal?
No. We want more entertainment.
Oh, man.
I didn't say go out there and fight gladiator style. Like,
gives
new
definition to arena football.
Oh, man, arena football.
That or...
You guys
even if
that
we said...
Kansas City had one of those?
Yeah.
Three-on-three basketball tournament, I would be interested in some AFC versus NFC three-on-three
NFL
games.
NFL blitz!
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Like an NFL blitz-style football? Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
That being said, we are... wrapping up this episode, I do want to thank you all for listening. My name's Caleb, and we are signing out.
Bye.